he's the only one who can say, like, I am Batman, and for me it'd be the absolute truth. Oh, I'm gonna cry.
Hello, everyone, and welcome into another exciting edition of the Brothers Movie Factory. I'm your host, Ben. With me, as always, the brother of the Brothers Movie Factory.
I am Vengeance. I am the Knight. I am Gus of the Brothers Movie Factory.
Dear God.
My God.
Yes. Indeed, over there, Gus, the brother of the brother of the brother of the Brothers Movie Factory in the Night. And with that being said, hey, welcome in to the Brothers Movie Factory. Here we are once again on a very somber episode of the Brothers Movie Factory as we are paying our respects to an iconic part of, it seems, many's childhood, and that being Kevin Conroy and his passing. Obviously playing Batman for much of your life, much of my life, much of everyone's life in the animated series as well as video games, and even having appearances in DC television shows as well. And so we figured that we would come together and do an episode on Kevin Conroy and some of his work, most particularly what we're going to be talking about today, but we'll get there in a second. So just to give you a brief intro to what we do here on the show is every week we watch a movie. We then take the pod to discuss said film, what we liked, what we didn't, what worked, what didn't. We then submit that movie to the factory. That's where we take the film we just watched, and we have a little fun with it. Maybe we imagine what it would look like today with modern booking, same movie but with new actors and actresses and modern day director. Maybe we take an animated movie and imagine it live, baby, live, or maybe we do something different like today where we're going to take a live movie and imagine it animated. So with that being said, do you want to tell the folks at home a little bit about what we're going to be doing today?
Well, with the passing of beloved voice actor Kevin Conroy, most iconically known for playing Batman, why not talk of one of his greatest works, which is Batman Mask of the Phantasm, the 1993 theatrically released animated feature that people often forget to include when talking about, even when people are talking about the best Batman movie, let alone when people are saying, like, what's the best Batman movie? And someone's like, Mask of the Phantasm. They're like, no, ones that were, like, released in theaters. Like, it was. Often forgotten about in conversation. But excellent movie. It is, it takes inspiration from Batman Year One, the graphic novel by Frank Miller, and Batman Year Two. But what's great about this movie is it takes a unique look at the origin of Batman, where at this point in time in 1993, we didn't really get to see on the television screen yet. You got a little tease of it in 1989 with Batman, but they took their own liberties with that, as they did here. But this definitely is more of the origin story of how Batman came to be, very similar to what they ended up doing masterfully also in Batman Begins in 2005. But yes, indeed, Batman, Mask of the Phantasm, Kevin Conroy is Batman, Mark Hamill is the Joker, has everything you'd want in this picture. And I had the pleasure of getting to see it on the big screen for its I don't know what anniversary it was, but they just played it on the big screen, so I went and saw it a couple weeks ago. And unfortunately Kevin Conroy passed away earlier this week at the time of recording, and it hit me hard, and we'll get into that here a little later. But you're like, well, that's how you broke me the news. You're like, well, I guess we got to do Mask of the Phantasm.
Yeah, and I think your response was, no.
You haven't like, it's been so long since you've seen this movie, it's basically like you haven't seen it, correct?
Yeah, like, I remembered portions, little bits and pieces here and there. Like, I knew the semi-twist that this movie has, and I knew... I remember that it was kind of an origin story, so to speak, but otherwise, I didn't remember much of it at all. I also, you know, you for as much as you would tell me anytime I'd say, like, hey, I might watch it, and you'd be like, oh, it's very short film, tight film. I didn't realize that it's, like, not even a feature film when you really get down to it. What, feature film is 90 minutes, right?
No, you can be a feature film if it's over 1 hour.
Oh, really? That mm-hmm. seems wrong, but considering that TV shows are over 1 hour now.
Yeah, I've seen movies in the theater that are like an hour and 11 minutes, you know.
You know, that's what this movie basically is. It sits at a tight 77 minutes, I believe, or 73, mm-hmm. somewhere in that range, just over 70 minutes. And it is a short film. I watched it at night as I held the baby, and it was... Yeah, it was different than I remember, and it's, you know, interesting. It's an interesting Batman film in that it is such a tight story. Like you said, that it's this introduction to who Batman is as a character slash, you know, and it's a character that we already know so well from the animated series. It's like, you know, they were multiple seasons in at this point and creating this movie. And doing, you know, a background to kind of like a prequel portion almost at times. And it's told very effectively and how he wants to become this hero to save Gotham to, you know, kind of repay a debt he thinks he owes to his parents and a promise he owes them. And it's done in a different way than really any other Batman movie, especially with, you know, he's more vocal about why he's doing it. Like, you know, we in Christian Bale's Batman, like, we know why he's doing it. He explains it and everything like that. But there's never really that scene where, like, there is in this one where he goes to the grave and he's talking to his parents and explaining what he's doing and kind of like that. I know in Batman Begins there's the grave scene, but not like this, where it's very fleshed out and emotional. He's a very emotional Bruce Wayne. More so than I've seen before. And I think that's why people love Kevin Conroy as Batman, is because he always did such a great job at separating them. You know, Christian Bale is good at separating Bruce Wayne, Batman. Michael Keaton was always pretty similar in his portrayals both ways. Val Kilmer, it's kind of same deal. George Clooney notoriously was just George Clooney. But Kevin Conroy, you would, you know, while their voices sound very similar, like he does ultimately change his voice to be Batman and then change his voice to be Bruce Wayne, you wouldn't be, you know, far off if you were like, oh, they sound like two different people, because at the same time he changes the inflection and he changes the pacing sometimes and how he says things.
Yeah, it's definitely the emotion of how he emoted different. He was like the first one to actually separate the two. Mind you, he started voicing Batman in 1992. So at that point, we only had like Adam West Batman, Michael Keaton Batman on television or the big screen. So yeah, he was the first one to actually make these two characters.
Indeed. I thought you were going to keep going.
Nope. I was just piggybacking off of your sentence.
Yeah, but I mean, and so we come off this fantastic animated series, which, you know, is interesting in that, you know, you've rewatched through it. I haven't. But it's ingrained in my memory as a portion of my childhood. Same as it is for you. I think a little more for you than me, just because you were older when it was out. It was more your thing, more your bag, in that it was, you know, it was a big deal when you were growing up versus when I was growing up, it was a big deal to you, and so I watched it.
Not only is it a big deal for me, more so, it's my favorite animated show, like cartoon show of all time.
Yeah, and I think part of that is how, like, grown up it is. It doesn't feel like a kid's show. It feels more, honestly, to me, it feels more like a serious anime at times for, like, a Western cartoon, you know?
Mm-hmm.
Because yeah, it is so serious.
It's not goofy. It treats its audience with some maturity. Yes, it's for kids, essentially, but it's for all ages, really. They tackle some dark themes in it. There's, you know, real world threats in the show. And it's dark. I mean, literally, it's dark. They animated the show and this movie that we're talking about today on black paper, which I believe had never been done before, where traditional animated shows are obviously done on good old white paper. They animated this show on black paper to just give it an extra layer of darkness.
They had never
visually.
No one had ever done that before. Like, for some reason, I had it in my mind that Akira did that, but
I don't think so.
Am I
no.
mistaken? Yeah.
Yeah, I do not think so. I'd have to look into that, but I know that's, like, famously what the show had done. We'll say probably with confidence that it is for show in the States that did that.
Yeah.
But it's dark in a good way. It's not like dark like rated R dark, but it's dark in a mature like film noir kind of way.
Yeah. No, and it has it has imagery that is relatively scary for a kid show. You mentioned how there's a scene in this movie where that it's kind of ingrained in your nightmares. But even, you know, I remember episodes like the Man Bat episode, or mm-hmm. you have when Ra's al Ghul or Ra's al Ghul, depending. Mm-hmm. But when you have him and that part where he gets into the Lazarus pit?
Oh, yeah.
And he comes out all like screwed up, and you're like, eek.
He's laughing like a demon, and he picks up his daughter, and he's going to throw her, and he's like,
and you have, like, Scarecrow was always creepy, even the Puppet Master?
Scarface and Ventriloquist.
Ventriloquist, yeah, that's what I meant. Clayface episode, like, there's a lot, and you get to go through his robes.
Just watch them.
And it gives the show always did a good job at giving all the rogues, even if they were only in one or two episodes, giving all the rogues a good purpose and a sense of, like, belonging in that universe. I always kind of think back to, like for example, and this is going to be kind of different, but at the same time makes sense. But, like, think like Scooby-Doo, right? There was new monsters and people every single week. Or every single episode, but there's those ones that are really famous and familiar, and you remember them. I mean, as seen in the second live-action Scooby-Doo movie, when they, like, resurrect some of, like, the most famous Scooby-Doo monsters and creatures and people. And it's similar in this, in that every week there was, like, a new villain. And, you know, occasionally you'd have multiple Joker episodes or multiple Two-Face episodes and Penguin episodes. But at the same time, you had unique characters brought in as well to keep it fresh, and each one always kind of left their mark and felt like they were, you know, fit into that universe. You had real hero or real villains rather, like Penguin or Two-Face and Joker, but then you also had real, like, legitimate mutated villains like Clayface, like Man-Bat,
Killer Croc even.
Yeah, like, where it was just a little more over the top, but it always and it always worked. Yeah. And a lot of that is due to the work Kevin Conroy did, but also, you know, just the style and the writing of the show.
Yeah, the show was so brilliantly orchestrated from top to bottom that they could have the fantastical in this very real, grounded show, and it was believable. And that's just because it was handled by masters from top to bottom, the animators, the art direction, the writing, the directing, but also, yes, as you said, Kevin Conroy, the voice acting. Voice acting's top notch throughout the whole show, and it just, like, adds so much believability. Like, it's something that I think people don't appreciate enough, because they just naturally accept it. But when a voice actor is so good at the role they're in, like, meant to be kind of thing, they add so much depth to what you're viewing and hearing and taking in. for example, like in a bad way, it, for me, this is just my opinion, recently watched the movie Soul by Pixar.
Yeah.
Pretty good movie. But the voice acting choice of Tina Fey for that, little soul person in that, really threw me off. Now, I'm not saying she's bad talent. Obviously, she's not. But I just felt like it was a bad voice casting choice, personally. And it just threw me out of it. Anytime she talked, I was like, this voice just does not fit this visual, you know?
Yeah.
That was just me. Whereas in the animated series of Batman, and I could just be speaking from nostalgia, but I'm not the only one who feels this way. Literally every voice actor is so recognized for playing that role. Like Mark Hamill. Like, he's done so much work in his career. I debate if he'll be remembered more for playing Luke Skywalker or the Joker.
You know? I think that one would be more you, but not that his Joker performance. I mean, there's a reason why when people do top tier Joker lists, he's always number one or two. And if they include him, a lot of times people just do live action. But there's also a reason that a lot of times people that are less in the know don't even know that's Mark Hamill.
That's so true.
So true. That's why, I mean, like, everyone knows Mark Hamill's Luke Skywalker. Not everyone knows that, you know, that's like, you know, everyone knows Mario. Like, if you were like to sit down and be like, who's a more popular video game character, Mario or Link? Like, everyone knows Mario. Not everyone knows Link.
Zelda.
Yeah, even though they're most like greatly, like, they sell a lot of games.
Yeah, but that's a good point. But even stepping away from the animated series, because we're talking about youth and stuff. Actually, before I step away, I think we've said this a million times on the show, but there's this VHS tape we grew up watching. Our older brother recorded a marathon of Batman in like 1993, I think. And so we have this like VHS tape with like 3 hours of Batman, maybe 4 hours of Batman the Animated Series, and it had
more
like vintage
3 hours of commercials.
Yeah, it had these vintage commercials of like old early 90s shows and toys.
Mighty Max. What was the little cars? Remember the little cars? They're like the pocket. You like opened up the thing.
They had a key. They had a key in them, right?
Yeah, I think
and
so.
You turn the key and it would like transform. I can't remember. It was something key cars.
Key cars.
Key warriors. It was Wheel Warriors. That was a cartoon. I don't think these are Wheel Warriors. Yeah, I have to look into that because now I'm curious. I want to find that VHS tape. I want to convert it to digital so it can last forever.
The thing is, I remember it like not working very well every now and again.
Yeah, like, you know, you get the VHS, the whatever you call them, like static lines, stuff like that. But yeah, going beyond that, because yeah, essentially this cartoon was made for young viewers, but able to be watched by all ages because it's a very mature, rich show. You were saying at the top, like, Kevin Conroy's voice is so nostalgic and a part of a lot of people's childhoods. It's part of a lot of people's teenage years, adult years, because of his work in those video games, the Arkham Asylum video games, yeah, or the Arkham games. He voiced him in 3 games, correct? Asylum City and Arkham Knight, I believe.
Yeah, did he not do Arkham Origins?
No, he did not.
Okay.
No.
Then yes, those three. And then he was also in the DC TV universe, which was relatively popular, when they did the Crisis on Infinite Earths.
He got to physically finally portray that character. Did I lose you?
No.
Yeah, I heard a da-da-dum. I was like, what is that?
That must have been on your end because I didn't hear anything on mine.
Yeah. Okay. Good. It was Kevin Conroy.
Yeah. I will be remembered. Key Force.
Key Force
by Hot Wheels. Key Force. Hell yeah. They popped up and you popped in a little key and they transform in a certain way. Like this one's like trunk pops open.
Check them out. Yeah, he got to portray him live action, video games, multiple other shows even. Like, he wasn't just in Batman the Animated Series, but he appeared in some Superman stuff, the Justice League show, JLA, which is also part of a lot of people's youths, but he spanned throughout. He'd been voicing Batman consistently since 1992. Other people also voiced Batman throughout this time, but he consistently would come back and play this role again and again and again and again. And he's just, I really think he'll be remembered for being the most iconic version of Batman, just because of his longevity, just because of his resume.
I mean, according to this, I just looked up his game credits, and most recently, I didn't know this, but it's according to this, he did the voice acting for Multiverses, fighting game, Batman Arkham Underworld, Arkham VR, Arkham Knight, Infinite Crisis. He did it in Injustice, Gods Among Us 1 and 2. I remember this game. You remember Batman Rise of Shinsu?
Yeah.
It was a Batman Animated Series GameCube game, as well as Batman Vengeance. I remember that game as well. And then he was in, like, Max Payne 2.
He's done a lot of work.
Yeah, he did Lego DC Supervillains. He's done lots of good Batman stuff, but also, amongst other things as well. But, yeah, I didn't realize that he was Batman in all those other video games. Like, I played both Injustice games. I never realized it was Kevin Conroy.
He was in Batman Beyond, the sequel series to the animated series. And, you know, throughout his career, he's voiced a couple Batman in a couple films, whether they're theatrically released or made for TV, including Batman Beyond, Return of the Joker. Do you remember this one, Batman Sub-Zero?
Yeah, I was going to watch that the other night.
That one is excellent too. And of course, Batman Mask of the Phantasm, which I got to see on the big screen and cried a few times just because of how epic it is. And you got to see, essentially, for the first time.
Almost polar opposite, on a very small screen, because I watched phone.
Pretty sure before the movie started in the theater, it was like, they did a promo where the screen was real tiny, and it was playing, like, Avatar or something. It's like, you don't want to watch your movies like this. You want to watch them like this.
And, like, filled up the screen. Correction. I do want to watch them like that, because I have to.
Yeah, what were your thoughts on Batman Mask of the Phantasm?
Honestly, I was really impressed with the story that's being told. So basic, elevator pitch of the story is Batman. It starts really right off the bat, right? Because it is a very tight film. It doesn't waste any time. It starts, Batman's breaking up, it was like a laundering deal. They were going to money launder some fake money, some counterfeit money. And
it was animated money, please.
Yeah, animated money. And Batman breaks it up. And then one of the bosses is getting away, and all of a sudden this phantasm appears, which is a really cool design. It looks almost like Batman with kind of like a Hookman hand, and like a knife hand, and this really cool vented mask, and very ghostly, very ominous, saying that they're the angel of death, and they definitely are, because that was my biggest surprise, was how, we talked about it earlier, but we watched this show growing up, and just going back to it now, and seeing more so how adult it is compared to modern day cartoons and shows. That's where I was like, it's almost more akin to like an anime for me, like a more action-y anime, in that it is, right off the bat, like the villains pull out guns and start shooting. Whereas like I'm currently rewatching Yu-Gi-Oh, and there's like all these scenes where they edited out the guns, so it's just guys pointing. And so like stuff like that. Or, that the boss of that like operation dies in like a car crash, like a pretty gruesome Fast and the Furious car crash, where he like gets sent out of a building and then you just hear the horn blaring. Or even later on in the movie, which we'll talk about with the graveyard scene, like that's pretty gruesome and scary. But
not only do they kill, or does this phantasm kill people in this movie, which is shocking enough, the characters in the movie, the audience, or the civilians below, hear this car crash, look up, and see Batman.
Yeah.
So they assume Batman is killing people now.
Yeah, and that's really it. Like, the whole movie revolves a very simple plot, and that it's kind of revolving around these mobsters kind of getting hunted down, almost like a horror movie, by this phantasm. Kind of like I Know What You Did Last Summer vibes, only it's this phantasm. It's I Know What You Did, you know, several years ago.
So you're telling me the hook man from I Know What You Did Last Summer, that whole thing,
he's a fisherman.
It's just a ripoff of Batman Mask of the Phantasm.
Exactly. Good for you. Yeah, I mean, so that's like that is the plot, and they do such a good job making you care about these characters that are introduced in this film, because there's a female character, Andrea, or Andy, not Woody's Andy, introduced.
Batman's Woody's Andy.
Yeah. Hey, how about, they introduced that, her as a character, and they do so through flashbacks. Like, it's not even until like, oh man, I think it was like 20 minutes left in the movie, 25 minutes left in the movie, where they like Bruce Wayne and her finally like come back together in the present day. But they build the relationship so well between them, not only through their interactions, but Bruce Wayne's interaction on his own. And I mean, even I texted you where it's like they meet, this Bruce Wayne meets this girl when he's in college, at like a cemetery, and literally like they talk for like 5 minutes, not even, and she just drives away, and that's that. And then she just comes to his house 3 days later, and she's like, "Hey, you didn't call. Hey, Harry, you never called.
Dead.
Yeah, I figured he must be dead." And he's like, "Oh, not everyone calls you." And then they fight a little bit. She like flips him with jujitsu, and then he sweeps the leg. Then they just make out, and that's that. It's like they never met before, like 3 days ago. That's when I texted Gus, and I was like, "This guy's smooth." But still,
is he smooth, or does she just get what she wants? Clearly, that is the case.
Maybe both. But at the same time, like that's that. Like, and it's believable. You know, a lot of times, if we were to see that same exact thing, you'd roll your eyes. Like, you know, I even texted you jokingly. I was like, "This guy's smooth," but at the same time, I'm like, "I believe it." I mean, it's Bruce Wayne. He's smooth, and she's you know, like it just works.
It works so well that it, like, I don't know. It feels like I've seen these characters before. Like, I've seen their history before, but it's only in this movie. Like, these characters are only together in this one movie. Like, they're not in a sequel episode or anything like that. It's just a romance of Batman. Like, it almost feels like a Lois Lane situation, you know, where everyone knows Lois Lane's with Superman for the most part. Like, it feels like Andrea and Bruce Wayne are just like, that's their thing, but it's really like Batman and Catwoman or something, you know what I mean?
Yeah, generally. And that's what's so unique about this one, is it feels organic. It doesn't feel forced, it doesn't feel rushed. And yeah, it feels like a long lost character that's never been used before, but it's an original character, completely original character. And yeah, there's like background stories. You see a lot of like random little origins. Like, you get they're at like the World of the Future expo, and Batman sees or Bruce Wayne sees for the first time his future Batmobile. But you also get flashback scenes of like Batman being Batman for the first night and just like wearing like a hood, not even a hood, like a ski mask, and he's like making his jiu-jitsu noises like wah, wah, wah. And you're like, geez, but
like, they weren't afraid of me.
Yeah, and it's like, no wonder. But at the same time, it makes sense. And like, that's really the movie is a lot of flashbacks and a lot of build. There is action throughout, but all in all, I'd say this movie is a romance movie first, and then it's kind of this drama story second, and then lastly, it's like superhero action third, which is a lost art in today's superhero films.
The thing I love in this movie is near the beginning, he does his like Batman thing. He encounters the Phantasm. He gets blamed for the murder, and well, next thing you know, Bruce Wayne's at a party, yeah. And you know, people are looking for Brucey, and he gets wind that Andrea is back in town, so he like kind of goes into seclusion in his den. And it goes into a flashback. That's where we get to see, like, oh, he heard Andrea. Like, who is this? It goes into a flashback. What I love about this movie is, like, 15, 20 minutes go by, and then it comes back to present day. I'm like, oh, shit. Yeah, I forgot we were in a flashback.
Yeah, the only thing that differentiates it is that his hair's shorter.
Yeah, slicked back.
His hair's shorter,
something.
And he's not as, you think this is slicked back? This is pushed back. But...
sure.
He he's also a little smaller, but they do a really good job explaining their relationship, and also they do introduce, I don't know if it's a brand new plot point, but something that I haven't seen before this one, which is that him toying with the idea really early of giving up being Batman. You know, in those flashbacks, you see that he doesn't want to keep doing this Batman thing if he has someone he needs to come home to. He had no intention. Great scene. Great. I know. I was just actually watching an interview, Kevin Conroy interview, where he said that this scene, out of all the things he has ever done as Batman, that was one of the ones he was most proud of, because he got to like flex his muscles, his acting muscles. But there's a great scene where Bruce Wayne's in the rain talking, like in a thunderstorm, talking to his parents' gravestones, and he's explaining, you know, things are different now. Like, I can give more money to the city. I can get them to buy or pay more police. Like, I don't need to do what I'm doing anymore. And he's like asking for their permission, but they're dead. So it's more like he's asking for his own permission. Can he live with the guilt of, you know, not doing this anymore? If he gives it all up to,
can he
be with Andrea? And it's interesting.
Can he be released? Can he be released from his vow? Because he didn't count on being happy.
Yeah, which is cool. He, like, I've never seen that done in a Batman story before.
I mean, which is also interesting, too, just because we know who Batman is so well, and we know what he does become, but that's what's kind of, like, not frustrating in a good way. Like, we know where this is going kind of deal. But he's begging to break his vow. He hasn't even become Batman yet.
Yeah.
So he's still pursuing this promise, this vow. It's more than a promise.
Yeah.
And that's what's great about Andrea, is she's like, maybe they already have, like, you know, released you. Maybe they sent me.
Yeah. And two, it's interesting that she almost plays a part in him. Kind of, she's that point that pushes him into the dark and brooding, because you see, like, early on when he does is doing his duty as Batman, but he's not Batman yet. He's over the top, like, whoa, but then, you know, it's shortly after he proposes to Andrea, and she then abruptly leaves for, you know, unknown reasons. She writes something, but unknown reasons. That he becomes Batman after that. She almost, like, is that he just needed that little push, as Joker in The Dark Knight would say.
Not only does he, like, finally take that push to become Batman and go full dark brooding, but he does it in maybe the most epic fashion you've ever seen.
Yeah, no, I think that was one of the most effective ways, in that, you know, Alfred and every rendition of Batman, whether it's you know, my favorite Alfred in the original Batmans with, like, Keaton and the 90s Batmans, or you have, you know, Michael Caine, or most recently Andy Serkis and Jeremy Irons. They're always, you know, they know it's Bruce Wayne. And while they show emotion from time to time, generally they know who Batman is. They understand exactly what he's doing, and they know what he's going for, right? They know that he's trying to be a symbol and all this stuff and strike fear into the criminals. Whereas our Alfred, he knew that, and he knows what's happening, but we see for the first time his reaction to him becoming Batman and not recognizing, you know, what he's looking at anymore. This boy that he raised from when he was a little, you know, a little kid, to seeing him become this, like, monster almost in front of his eyes was a great moment.
Putting on the cowl,
yeah,
for the first time, and that music that plays, like, chorus chanting Batman theme while he puts on the mask and turns around, and Alfred's just like, oh my god.
Yeah, I love that. Like, that was just really good, and that, you know, it's effective because he says early on, like, they're not afraid of me. These people I don't know, these criminals that shouldn't be afraid of just some random guy jumping in. But the man that raised him, knows him better than anyone else, is afraid of him, shows that, like, how effective that will be. And so that's really cool, a cool scene. I mean, this movie, I don't want to go too long on it, because I would encourage most people to watch it, because it is really short.
And there are some really good twists and turns.
Mm-hmm. But
within it.
The big one I wanted to talk about is, you know, the Joker is introduced a little later in the film. I won't go too far into him, just because some of the twists and turns relate to the Joker. There's a councilman throughout the movie trying to basically arrest Batman, and ultimately the Joker gives him, like, a nerve toxin, makes him laugh, and they relax him at the hospital, and Batman sneaks into the hospital room, and it's a horrifying but great scene in that the councilman is terrified. He's, like, crying, but he's laughing because he has this neurotoxin. So he's like, oh no. And he's, like, crying. It's like, that's so effective. And that, like, he's just so terrified, but can't help but laugh.
Yeah, it's terrifying.
It's a really, really good scene.
But how nice of a surprise was it for you? Cause I'm pretty sure you told me you had no idea Joker's even in this movie.
So when
he pops up, you're like, oh
yeah, I was all for it. Cause I recently played Arkham Asylum about 2 months ago, and going back through that, I mean, my favorite part of that movie, or that movie, that game, isn't the combat system, which I remembered, like, growing up. I love the combat, I love the gadgets and all that stuff. It's the performances, and Mark Hamill and Kevin Conroy. And so seeing Mark Hamill and that role again, and also having Kevin Conroy and him go back to back throughout, especially in the finale, is really welcome. And I ultimately, I was really happy to see him in it. I was kind of disappointed to a degree in that I was like, where's Harley? I'm so that, like, both having both of them together in the animation is ingrained in my mind, but at the same time, no, it was good to see him back.
You know, in the animated series, which a lot of people don't know this, but Harley Quinn was invented for the animated series. So she's one of the most popular DC characters. She's probably one of the most popular, like, superhero characters in general.
Say,
Was made up in 1992 for the show. But she's not in every episode with the Joker. Like, Joker appears in plenty that she's just not present in. It was a nice surprise. I mean, obviously, the Joker is the most popular Batman villain. And it has kind of been maybe overdone at this point, a little too many. What do they call it? Diminishing returns, I guess.
Yeah.
But back in this time, the only previous Jokers we had seen are Jack Nicholson famously playing him and Cesar Romero playing him back in the day.
Yeah.
He's the most popular character in the animated show, so it made sense to throw him in there. But the creators, they're very careful with putting him in here because initially they didn't want to. It was more like they kind of had to for popularity reasons. They didn't want to because they were afraid it was going to feel too much like Batman 1989, you know, having a theatrical released Batman movie, origin story, Joker's in it kind of deal. But they did it in a way that was different enough, obviously. But what they do with the Joker in this movie is very unique. And I'm getting goosebumps just thinking about it. So it's definitely worth checking out for those story points. But Mark Hamill's performance as the Joker in this movie is great. Like, laugh out loud stuff. But also, I won't spoil it either, but there's something in the finale that happens that is so epic and so the Joker. Like, if this is just me, and I'm a nostalgia fanboy, but for me, that scene in the finale of this movie is the purest culmination of what the Joker is. And just like one scene with no dialogue, just a laugh, really.
Yeah.
And I'm like, yeah, that's what the Joker is all about right there.
Yeah, no, for sure. I think all in all, I think this movie is a one of the best versions of Batman you can see. And I know a lot of people won't give it a chance just because it's animated. Mm-hmm. But definitely worth a watch if you are a fan of Batman. I would argue that most people who are fans of Batman, like very big fans of Batman, have seen this movie. But if you are like a budding fan or just like the live action Batman movies but have never seen this or tasted the animation, I would ultimately say that this is a good starting spot. I mean, you don't need any background. It's a self-contained story of the animated, like it's in the animated series. There's no, because it's an origin story, a lot of it takes place before anything happening in the animated series. And a lot of times the animated series is a self-contained stories through and through.
I've done this before where I've recommended, like after watching the movie, like gateway drugs, start watching the show. And people have done that and really enjoy the show. I've done the opposite too, where it's like, hey, you want to see this movie? Let's watch the show first. Let's watch I don't know, 4 or 5 key episodes. So you get like the vibe.
Yeah.
You get like, cause it's different, in a good way, but it feels different than most shows. So, get the vibe and then see the movie. And then it almost makes the movie even better. Side question a little bit. What is of the theatrically released Batman movies, where does this one rank for you?
I would probably rank Dark Knight's always been my favorite, then 89, then 89, then Returns, then Begins, then Rises, probably after Rises. So above Forever and Batman and Robin, and the, it was the original, it was Batman with,
Adam West.
Adam West, was that in theaters, that movie?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm, okay, mm-hmm. So like that one. And
so that one's number one, yeah.
Then all the others, all the Ben Affleck, the Batfleck ones, I could not care less.
Yeah. This one's really tough for me. It's a lot of Batman movies are, unfortunately for me, like, they're my favorite as I'm watching them, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
Like, this one's my favorite, then I watch another one, I'm like, no, this one's my favorite, but if I were being like completely objective in my own opinion, this one's up there. It's usually a toss up between Dark Knight, this Batman Mask of the Phantasm, and maybe Batman Returns. But the Nolan trilogy, that's, if I'm watching Batman Begins, I'm like, this is my favorite Batman movie, or my favorite of the Nolan trilogy. Same with Rises, but, you know, Batman 89's been creeping up there recently. I probably watch that one like twice a year at this point. Whereas the other Batman movies, I don't. I might. Well, I watch Batman Returns every Christmas. Yeah, Mask of the Phantasm is, if it's not number one, it's realistically easy number two.
Yeah.
I just love the feeling of this movie. I love the story. I love the liberties it takes. It does its own thing with the canon, I guess, of Batman that feels like this is what it should always be kind of deal. Gives my favorite overall performance of the Joker. Has my favorite Batman. Has some great twists. And the music. Mm-hmm. Holy shit. That's also why I recommend the show, watching the show before the movie. Because they use the music from the show, which is great, by Shirley Walker. But they use it in this movie, but they put a chorus to like the theme. So if you love the intro to the show, they do that here, but with like an epic chorus, which is funny because it sounds Latin. They go like, but it's the animators, their names backwards that they're chanting.
That's funny.
So it sounds Latin, but it's just names backwards.
Yeah, that's interesting. I didn't know that. That's a good one. That's interesting, man. I ultimately think this is definitely worth a watch. I would encourage anyone who's never heard, you know, Kevin Conroy's work as Batman, or never heard even Mark Hamill's work, but yeah, we're talking Kevin Conroy today. Definitely seek it out, because there's a reason why when he passed away, you know, there was a lot of people, you know, it was a big deal. Like, you know, people, celebrities pass away every year. And every year people, you know, mourn that celebrity and are upset with their passing and, you know, remember the work that they did. And, you know, with that, to that effect, voice actors, pass away every day. And, you know, famous voice actors, people who were a part of your life that a lot of times you didn't even know they were, you know. Voice acting is a very underappreciated field. You know, not for Gus and I. We both, you know, very much so enjoy our voice actors and know our voice actors and whatnot. But to many, you know, it's something that's not as appreciated. And so to see how many people were, you know, deeply impacted by Kevin Conroy's passing was really important, to see that, you know, the work that he did as Batman and as a character that many people loved didn't go unnoticed. And so, with that being said, anything you'd like to say before we go to the factory?
Yeah, I mean, it is always strange when a celebrity or fixture in pop culture or a person of history from your childhood passes away. But this one hit differently for me. This one hit differently than most. So I do want to thank Kevin Conroy for his art and his voice throughout the years. He's the only one who can say, like, I am Batman, and for me, it'd be the absolute truth. Oh, I'm gonna cry.
I knew it would happen.
Go to the factory, damn it.
All right. So with that being said, we will take that time to go to the factory. This is where we take the film we just watched and we imagine what it would look like if it came out today, maybe, or maybe have a little fun with it here and there. So for today's factory, we're going to do something a little different. Gus came up with the following idea. We are going to take all the live-action Batman movies and choose one of them to be redone in the animated style of the Batman animated series, and with the same, you know, animated characters. So if it's like a movie with the Joker, it'd be Mark Hamill's Joker, etc., right? So which movie in the live-action universe do you think lends itself the best to the animated style? Because I think it's a very easy choice.
It is a very easy choice, because not only if you took this plot of what I'm about to say, which Batman movie, and brought it into the animated series, it would improve it immensely. It would be taken more seriously. It would be a more serious story, obviously, a more mature story. But I think it would actually be a pretty good Batman animated series movie, and that's Batman and Robin, 1997.
That's what I was going to go with, because while I love Arnold Schwarzenegger's Mr. Freeze, like the Mr. Freeze if you take out the ice puns and replace them with the very serious deadpan cold as ice, Mr. Freeze from the animated series, and Uma Thurman is good as, you know, Poison Ivy, but replacing it with the animated series Poison Ivy, even animated series Robin.
Animated series Bane, let's not forget.
Yeah, like, I think it all just works better, even then the plot's fine. I think the plot would be fine. The plot would,
especially
be as,
for an animated series.
Exactly.
Movie.
Yeah, because oftentimes you've made the point, and I know it's kind of a more popular theory / you know, fan thing, but it's that that movie is almost a sequel to the Adam West films or Adam West version series of Batman, and so it does
definitely
fit.
More inspired by sure.
Yeah so well, it does fit more in that vein. You know, because you take. The animated series definitely had more of the vibe of the Burton Batman movies. And so you would get those movies. You would get this Batman Forever or Batman and Robin back to that feel of the Burton films, but also have the benefit of, you know, the acting. Because, you know, Chris O'Donnell, like, yeah, sure, he's Robin, but he's not Robin. And, you know, George Clooney is widely considered the worst Batman for a reason. So you're upgrading in two of the main parts right there. Like I said, I love Arnold Schwarzenegger's portrayal as Mr. Freeze, but you're upgrading. You're upgrading it in every facet. You're upgrading for that film. So I think that's just an easy choice. If you don't know what we're talking about, go watch Batman and Robin and try and get through the first 20 minutes. Last time I did, I couldn't. So and that's rare.
You can imagine, like, animated series Kevin Conroy Batman coming through the ceiling of a museum, landing on a brontosaurus sculpture and being like, "Hello, Freeze, I'm Batman," and sliding down Flintstone style down this dinosaur tail. Like, it wouldn't seem so silly in this show's world. But
even pulling out a Batman credit card that says expiration date forever, you'd be like, "All right, cool. That's funny. It's a good gag."
That is a good gag.
When live action, you roll your eyes. Or even them sailing down on doors, like windsurfing down on doors. Like stuff like that.
The furnace.
Like everything works better. I think second to that would be Batman Forever. Both the Schumacher movies.
Yeah, I was just going to say, I don't want to sound like I'm attacking the Schumacher movies, but yeah, that would be my other choice. Same reasons. And I love both. I love Batman and Robin too, but I actually think Batman Forever is a good movie too.
It is.
It would just be a very, very unique, not unique. I just think it'd be a good adaptation choice.
Yeah.
Also, because it's different. It's just so different. Like, Tommy Lee Jones is Two-Face and Clancy Brown's Two-Face from the animated series. Just like the way they're portrayed. It's so different.
Even the
Riddler,
Jim Carrey's Riddler, and the Riddler in the animated series. And
you know what I just found out? Speaking of Batman and Robin, you remember the crazy professor who makes the venom that goes into Bane and kills Pamela Isley, or so he thinks? I guess you'll have to die. That actor is the voice actor for the Riddler in the animated series.
Oh, really? That's funny.
Yeah. I didn't know that.
I never knew that.
Schumacher, but
yeah, your
animated
movies
version are already better.
Yeah, your movies are just cartoons. All right, yeah, so with that being said, let's go ahead and close out the show. So if you enjoyed what you heard, be sure to check us out over on Audioboom. That's our primary site. That's where we post to first and subsequently get shipped out everywhere else. So Spotify, Google Play, wherever you find your podcast, hey, we're there. You can also find us over at Twitter for the time being. We're at The Bros Movie Pod. That's where we're posting links to the show, clips of the show. When the show goes live, baby live, it'll be there first, etc., etc. You can also find us over on Facebook.
Hey, go to Facebook, type in The Brothers Movie Factory. You'll find us there. I like to make memes for watching each and every week and include links to the things Ben mentioned a moment ago, like Audioboom, Spotify, Twitter for now, and that.
So that is the show. We hope you enjoyed it. But until next week, Batman.
Batman.
Batman.